Today, we are talking about one of my favorite things in the online space, the FTC. I know. You're like, Emily, seriously, girl? Here's the thing. The FTC throws a whole bunch of shade in their press releases, and the shade they threw at Sunday Riley is totally deserved. We're also going to touch on University of Phoenix and Ben & Jerry's. I can't wait to jump right in. So let's get started. Hey there, this is Get Legit Law and Shit, and I'm Emily D. Baker, badass lawyer for online business. I've been a licensed attorney for over 15 years, and I'm a former prosecutor. So yeah, I know some shit, and we're going to talk about the legal shit you need to know. But don't worry, this is not another boring business podcast. So let's get started. The FTC. I know everybody's like, Emily, seriously, the FTC, they just got all up in YouTube's ass about violating children's privacy rights. And that was kind of awesome. But there is so much more goodness here. And I have talked about my Enneagram type online. And if you don't know the Enneagram, it is a personality profile that goes by number. So you can be a 1 through 9. I am a 1. I am the oneiest one. So when things like ruffle my feathers, I'm like, but they're like deeply unjust and it's unfair and no one should be doing that. And this is one of those cases that just riled me right up because it pisses me off. But I'm going to back up and talk a little bit about what false advertising is, because that's the heart of the story. And it's something that if you follow me on Instagram at the Emily D. Baker, if you don't, because I'm amazing and you should, I was throwing a whole bunch of shade at both Khloe Kardashian and Teresa Giudice or Giudice or however she pronounces her last name up until she takes a different last name because she's getting divorced, but she's branded around it. So maybe she won't drop her last name when she gets divorced from her husband who's been deported back to Italy because they committed a whole bunch of financial crimes. Either way, I was throwing shade over posts that were not declaring that they were sponsored and or advertisement. And then with Khloe Kardashian, I was throwing shade at the product she was sponsoring, but at least she made it clear it was an ad. So if you're not following along for that kind of goodness, come on over. I get a little shady. I mean, it's what commentary is for on the internet, isn't it? Just to throw a little shade, have a little fun. But false advertising actually does rile me up. Let's talk about what false advertising is. False advertising is, you know, Merriam-Webster type style here. Publishing, broadcasting, and publicly distributing an advertisement that contains untrue, misleading, or deceptive representation of a statement which was made knowingly or recklessly with an intent to promote the sale of property, goods, or services to the public. So a lot of social media profiles do this, right? A lot of social media profiles are promoting the sale of goods, even if they're affiliate goods. So it is really a whole new world online, and the FTC keeps reevaluating their regulations so that they can keep up to date on this. The FTC, a number of years back, started cracking down more on what employees were saying and then going after or saying that they would go after the employers. The reason I bring this up is because this gets into the Sunday Riley situation. But the FTC pointed out, and the American Bar Association actually had an article about this, and I will link that in the corresponding blog post to this episode, but that employee blogs and employee social networking created issues for employers because the FTC was regarding product endorsements as a risk. So if employees are like, oh my God, this is the greatest thing ever, but not disclosing that that's their employer, or I mean, essentially that they're getting money from the company that they're promoting because they're employed by them, that could be false or misleading, and that companies need to have a social media policy essentially in place to handle what employees are saying online, because the employer can be responsible for what the employees are saying. If you work for a company that you love, just say you work there and that you love it. Like, that's totally cool. It's not cool to leave out the nature of the relationship. What was crazy to me is that in this American Bar Association article, they stated that only 36% of 500 of the fastest growing companies had a formal social media policy for employees. What? Hopefully that is an old study. The article didn't cite when the study was, but I know that for a lot of online businesses, this is true. If you work with a team or if you work with employees and you have a social media presence and they have a social media presence, you have to, I can't climb in your ear anymore. You have to have a social media policy, because if your team that works for you is promoting you in an improper way, A, it's not a good look, and B, the FTC can actually come after you. Will they? That's another question. But what you've got to remember in cases like this with the FTC and even with the IRS, it's generally your competition or an ex-client or employee that's been pissed off in some way by you that is going to report these kinds of things, because that's how most of this starts. Most of these investigations starts because somebody's just pissed. They've had an ass full of it. They're not happy with you. When I was working with the U.S. Attorney's Office in law school, a lot of the cases that were coming through the IRS were coming from ex-spouses. The others, a lot of the time, were coming from ex-employees. So somebody who has beef, it's really easy for them to call and, you know, narc on you. So the FTC has a number of factors that they tell a company to consider, and that's, you know, and that they consider when they are evaluating these kind of cases. Whether the speaker is compensated by the advertiser. Well, if you're an employee, yes. Whether the product or service in question was provided gratis by the advertiser. If you're an employee, also possibly. The terms of any agreement between the speaker and the advertiser. That's where your social media policy can save your ass. The length of the relationship between the speaker and the advertiser. Oh, by the way, if you guys work with influencers to promote your business or you provide sample products, you also need to have guidelines in your collaboration agreement. Yes, there needs to be a collaboration agreement. No, you should not call it a partnership agreement. Yes, there should be a collaboration agreement. And yes, it should have this stuff stated very clearly so that you don't run afoul of the FTC, who is going to be on a social media war path for the next number of years, because this shit keeps getting done wrong and it pisses off people like me and the people that work at the FTC. Who are also probably Enneagram ones. Let's just call a spade a spade. The one thing about working at the district attorney's office is I didn't realize maybe how different my personality type was from others, because almost everyone I worked with was fairly similar. We self-selected into our little justice bubble. But anyway, factors that the FTC considers: the previous receipt of products or services from the advertiser to the speaker, and then the likelihood of future receipt of such products or services from the same advertiser to the speaker, you know, flat tummy tea and every Instagram model ever. And then the value of the item or services received by the advertiser from the advertiser to the speaker. So that's going to play a factor here as well. Keep that in mind as we jump into WTF Sunday Riley. When I first saw this case go down earlier, I was going to say earlier this year, but hello, Emily, it's 2020. So late in 2019, I was like, no. Like, seriously? So if you're not familiar with Sunday Riley, they are a skincare, kind of a luxury skincare brand. And they have a wide range of products in stores like Sephora. I've received Sunday Riley products in subscription boxes that I used to subscribe to. I've purchased, I don't know if I've purchased any, because they're expensive. And then their Good Jeans that everybody like swears by is like $160 for like an ounce or something. And I'm like, look, man, no. And then after this, I was like, oh no. But the thing that surprised me about this case is that by all accounts, the Sunday Riley products are pretty great. they work well. I think most of the negative comments regarding Sunday Riley is that their products are overpriced. And they are. They are expensive products. I can't say if that's overpriced or not. I don't know what the price of their goods are, but people pay the price. And there are people who choose expensive skincare on the belief that it has better ingredients, therefore it's going to be more effective. Also, they became kind of a like a social media brand, like, oh, it's really cool to use Sunday Riley, probably because it's luxury and expensive. So October 2019, the shit goes down. The FTC laid out Sunday Riley in their press release. Once again, it'll be attached, but their press releases are so shady. They just throw shade. All of it says alleged. In the end, Sunday Riley did not admit fault. So all of these are allegations by the FTC, and then this settled without Sunday Riley having to admit fault. However, there are emails quoted and there are whistleblowers, and reading this went, oh yeah, that's exactly what happened. But Sunday Riley has not admitted fault. So everything alleged by the FTC at this point is alleged. However, decide for yourself how it makes you feel. The two violations that the FTC alleges were false and misleading claims and then failure to disclose. So the failure to disclose was regarding reviews written by Sunday Riley herself and her employees on the Sephora website. If you are not familiar with the Sephora website, it has the ability to leave reviews. Now, what's interesting about the Sephora website is that it actually, on their back end of their system, will tag reviews coming from one IP address as a way to try to limit fake reviews or somebody like spamming negative reviews to try to trash a product or whatever it is. So there are actually some stopgaps in Sephora's own system to try to limit the issue of fake reviews. So it's alleged by the FTC that between November 2015 and August 2017, yeah, it's a long time, y'all, that managers of Sunday Riley, including Miss Riley herself, posted reviews on their own branded products on the Sephora website using fake accounts and requested that employees of the company do the same thing. So here's the tea on this, guys. Because Sephora has an IP blocking, you know, feature to the back end of their website, the initial reviews by Sunday Riley were removed as fake reviews because all of the reviews were coming from one IP address. And it's not uncommon that when all the computers at one company are pushing through to the internet, they're just coming from one IP address. Each computer at a company doesn't have its own. So did this trigger the fine folks at Sunday Riley to go, hey, we probably shouldn't do that. Sephora's blocking it. So that's probably a problem. Sephora, by the way, Sephora, pull Sunday Riley out of your stores if you want to make a stand, because this was all perpetrated on your site. This shit would piss me off. And if I was Sephora, I would strongly consider being like, hey, Sunday Riley, screw you. But it also depends on how much money Sunday Riley brings into Sephora and how much foot traffic. And I get that. But I would still be pissed and be very tempted to yank Sunday Riley out of my stores. As of now, it doesn't seem that Sephora has pulled Sunday Riley out of those stores, but Sephora, talk to your lawyers, consider it, just saying. When their contract expires, it might be a good look. Anyway, so Sephora doesn't allow the reviews to go through because of this one IP address. So the folks at Sunday Riley started using ExpressVPN. How do we know they started using ExpressVPN? Well, it's quoted in the FTC's press release that a company manager said, quote, they got an ExpressVPN account to allow us to hide our IP addresses and location when we write reviews. This is what a manager told the FTC. Now, if you're not familiar with a VPN, I actually use ExpressVPN, not sponsored, but ExpressVPN. Hit me up. I actually really like your product. So I use ExpressVPN, especially when I'm traveling, because I am not jumping on some hotel's Wi-Fi and have you be able to get the IP address of my computer or my phone, because I don't trust people and I don't trust you to not, you know, try to use the mutual Wi-Fi connection to access the things on my computer. I also have client files that I want to protect. So I take every length possible to use a VPN. The only time it's annoying is when you want to watch Hulu and you have to turn your VPN off. So I don't always watch Hulu when traveling unless I have a password protected access to Wi-Fi. And I'm actually considering going to like a little MiFi type of Wi-Fi creator so that I can use the VPN to log on to my own Wi-Fi. So I have like two steps. So you can bounce your IP address. You can also make it look like you're somewhere where you're not. So if I'm browsing in Los Angeles, I can make it seem that my IP address is coming from New York. So I can mask my location, mask my IP address, and make it harder for people to pinpoint where I am and make it harder for people to potentially access my system through Wi-Fi. There's a great VPN shout out in Spider-Man Far From Home, which if you haven't seen it, guys, it's a fucking great movie. Spider-Man Far From Home is a fantastic and humorous movie. I love the new Spider-Man series. I'm not going to go down that rabbit hole for y'all, but it's really great. Anyway, they joke about downloading a VPN so that the government can't track you when they're abroad. And it's such a little throwaway line that's so clever. God, I love that movie. But my love for Spider-Man aside, Sunday Riley as a company chose to get a VPN to mask the identity of where reviews were coming from. Like, that's a red flag, folks. So then, in an email clearly obtained by the FTC because they quote the damn thing in their shady press release that I live for, the FTC says in their press release, in an email from Ms. Riley to her team, she directed staff to, quote, create three accounts on Sephora.com registered as different identities and then leave 5-star reviews when reviewing Sunday Riley skincare products and dislike negative reviews. I continue the quote from the email that the FTC clearly has. If you see a negative review, all caps, dislike it. After enough dislikes, it is removed. This directly translates into sales. End quote. Y'all, the CEO of this company emailed her staff step-by-step instructions on how to use the VPN to set up personas to hide their identities and then to leave false-ass reviews on the Sephora website and to dislike negative reviews to translate into greater sales. That is some shady ass illegal shit. I am just saying. If all of those things happened, that is not okay. Fake reviews are misleading claims. They also failed to disclose the financial involvement. You can't do that, y'all. You can't leave fake reviews. So Sunday Riley told everyone how to be shady as hell. I can't. What I love though, and I'm gonna include this article as well. So if you want to find links to all of the tea, I am giving you what I think is the most interesting, but it will all be in the corresponding blog post. However, according to a BuzzFeed article, the FTC stumbled upon this case through a whistleblower who was posting about this on Reddit, saying that Sunday Riley was using fake reviews when the person was an employee and stated that the company did encourage people to post positive reviews at the launch of a particular product. So that this was kind of a launch-based thing. What I want my online entrepreneurs to take away for a minute is this is a massive ass company and they're insecure about the competition when they're launching a product. Like, don't be illegal. But when you get nervous about launching something new, about doing something new, about creating something, it's clear that other companies feel that way. Now, they were shady as hell about it, and I won't buy any more of their products because this shit pisses me off. But it also should be a little comforting knowing that other companies, large companies, feel nervous, feel the pressure to continuously have good launches, feel like compared to their competition, maybe they're not doing enough. And they are in a very crowded space. I mean, it's not like you can't find skincare at every price point. And I don't think anyone goes into Sephora and is like, oh my God, You have the balls to actually, no. People do go into Sephora and say, oh my God, you have the balls to charge $158 for this. The difference is at Sephora, you choose not to buy it. You don't go up to the register and say, oh my God, this isn't worth $158, but I want it. Can I give you 30? In the online space, people do that. And if they do that to you, you have the right to say no. Have your ballsy ass prices. Go ahead. Somebody will pay it. Obviously, people pay it for Sunday Riley products. They have actually good products by all accounts and didn't need to leave illegal reviews. They did anyway because they were scared. So fear is very real in the business space, no matter what. So if you run a business and this happens, just remember it happens to everybody. Don't be shady about it. Let your excellence speak for itself. I feel like now I should plug like asking you guys for reviews on the podcast, but I feel like that's too easy of an opportunity. I'm just going to let that be here. So what happened? Well, the FTC barred the company from reviewing its own products online. Oh, no shit, FTC. Thank you. The company must instruct employees to never review a product without disclosing their relationship to the company, you know, in accordance with the law. And the settlement, the FTC says, is intended to ensure that the respondents, Sunday Riley, do not engage in similar alleged illegal conduct in the future. So basically, Sunday Riley got a slap on the wrist and this massive press release kind of diming out everything that they did. Here's why that's important. It's frustrating. I'm going to get to why it's frustrating in a minute, but here's why it's important. This is a shot across the bow on reviews. And I'm going to do another episode about reviews because there have been lawsuits over negative reviews. There's stuff going on with Yelp reviews. We will talk about reviews in the online space because it's fascinating that like so much shit happens with reviews. But reviews really do drive business. And so it's becoming a battleground. I don't want to keep you here forever. I want to talk crap about Sunday Riley. So reviews are becoming a battleground. This is a shot across the bow that they are coming for you. That they are not going to let the review stuff go. And I have said it and will continue to say it. The FTC is coming for influencers who are not disclosing. And this is part of that. This is part of showing that the FTC is taking misleading advertising and false claims very seriously. Now, could they have maybe shown that they were being super serious by fining Sunday Riley? Perhaps they could have. Commissioner Chopra, joined by Commissioner Slaughter, by the way, killer last name. Pun intended. Sorry. Oh, I'm still recovering from the flu, so my voice still sounds terrible, but I can't help myself. Dad joke of the day. These two commissioners kind of dissented from the agreement, saying that it was too lenient, that the settlement would not deter other firms from engaging in fake review fraud, which is a growing issue in the online space, that the scheme was ongoing for almost 2 years with substantial financial benefits. I agree, by the way. Come on. This isn't like a few. Like, they went to the lengths to get a VPN and send out emails instructing employees how to do this. And the FTC is like, don't do it again. I just can't. The direct quote that I pulled from the dissenting opinion, as it were, states, "The settlement sends the wrong message to the marketplace. Dishonest firms may come to conclude that posting fake reviews is a viable strategy, given the proposed outcome here. Honest firms, who are the biggest victims of this fraud, may be wondering if they are losing out by following the law." And this is a sentiment in not just this case, but in things like AB5, in other areas where I talk to my clients and they are frustrated when the competition is doing it wrong, be it hiring wrong and therefore not incurring the expense of paying Social Security taxes and unemployment and disability and all the additional fees that come with hiring an employee, and how frustrating it is when the competition is not hiring properly so that the competition's overhead is lower. Therefore, you are spending more and making less because your overhead has gone up because you're doing it right. This is a common frustration. Doing it right is the best play in the long run, but I completely understand that there are shady companies out there that will roll the dice and be like, oh, we're not going to get fined. I think Sunday Riley was made an example of. I think they were dimed out because this is coming and there will be fines. And this was a perfect case for the FTC to say, this is what's coming and this is what we're going to do. However, you've got these emails that my little prosecutorial heart's just like, oh my God, the emails are such a slam dunk. Just find them. There's nothing they can do about it. For whatever reason, the FTC chose not to find them. They chose to make an example out of them, but I think it's because there are going to be more of these investigations and more of these cases coming. And I think that's a good thing for the online space. I think it's a good thing for consumers. I think fake reviews are a problem, and I think companies that do it right are frustrated. So just do it right. That's it. Just do it right. In a similar vein, the FTC did get out their fines for the University of Phoenix with regard to deceptive advertising. And this was also right at the end of 2019. The FTC entered into a $191 million settlement with the University of Phoenix. What? Yeah, for deceptive claims. And we are getting long here today, so I'm going to be brief with University of Phoenix and brief with regard to Ben and Jerry's. But University of Phoenix was misleading in their advertising with regard to the types of employers it worked with. So if you've seen some of the older University of Phoenix advertisements or radio ads where it's like, you know, we work with Adobe and Microsoft and Twitter, the FTC stated in the settlement press release that University of Phoenix was indicating they had special relationships with high-profile companies like Adobe, Microsoft, and Twitter, and that that created unique employment opportunities for University of Phoenix students, and that that is a large part of the problem. And they went through all of the ways the advertising really did make these claims that if you go to University of Phoenix, you're going to have these unique opportunities to get employment after you graduate from University of Phoenix. So in the $191 million settlement, $50 million in cash goes to former students, and the university has to cancel $141 million in debts owed directly to the school, which is probably a lot of students who took out loans to go there. So the students actually win in this judgment, and I'm all for that. If you choose to go to a place because they make claims that they can actually help you find a job. And University of Phoenix is really targeted at working individuals who want to get a degree. So if you're working full-time and busting your ass getting a college degree, and that all came through misleading advertising, you should get your money back. But let's talk about Ben and Jerry's. This is not an FTC case yet. This is a state-level marketing and false advertising claim that was filed in Vermont. We all know Ben & Jerry's is from Vermont. The suit alleges that Ben & Jerry's does not, in fact, come from Happy Cows on Caring Dairy Farms, and that Ben & Jerry's touting its social consciousness. This is another area where I think we're going to see crackdowns in advertising, just by the way, but that Ben and Jerry's capitalizing on their social consciousness, saying that their milk and cream comes from happy cows on Caring Dairy Farms is bullshit, and that the large majority of the milk and cream used does not, in fact, come from happy cows. It comes from like factory farmed cows who are presumably not happy. I want the judge to set up some kind of a test for what is a happy cow and what is not a happy cow. I feel like there are so many opportunities with this case. And I'm going to make a little bit of fun. However, using social consciousness to sell a product, if it's not actually the truth, is gross. So if it is actually true, because these are allegations at this point, that only a very small percentage of the milk and cream used by Ben & Jerry's comes from the type of dairy farms that it advertises, then the consumers should know that, because they are building a brand around social consciousness and around the, you know, the only from Vermont dairy farms. Well, if that's not true, you can't advertise it. What I love, though, is that in a lot of the news articles regarding regarding this lawsuit that was just recently filed at the end of October. So this has a long way to go in the state of Vermont. But it does point out that the plaintiff actually did purchase Ben & Jerry's flavors, because if you are a plaintiff in a case like this, you have to have standing, which means you have to, it means a lot of things, but generally you have to have been in a position to have been harmed and be proper to sue. So I wouldn't have purchased this had I known that the cows weren't really happy and the dairy farms weren't really caring. But the plaintiff purchased, I know you're dying to know, Fish Food, One Love, Americone Dream, Tonight Dough, Chocolate Chip Cookie Dough, Mint Chocolate Cookie, S'mores, and New York Super Fudge Chunk varieties. What's noticeably missing from this list for me is Chubby Hubby, which I think is accurate advertising, because if you eat it, natural consequence. And One Sweet World. Like, Fish Food got some play in this, but I worry that they've discontinued One Sweet World, which was the Dave Matthews flavor of Ben & Jerry's, in case you're not as large of a nerd as I am. Either way, this area of saying that promoting social consciousness, if it is, I guess, over-exaggerated or touted in a way that is not true to sell products, this has been sued over, but I believe there's going to be another wave of this, because as companies are targeting millennials, millennials tend to shop in a more social conscious way. It tends to be more important to them about whether companies are B companies or carbon neutral, or use sustainably and ethically harvested cotton or salmon or bamboo or whatever, if the straws save the sea turtles and all the things. And I'm not making fun of that. I am not making fun of using your wallet to purchase things that support your view of how the world should be. Have at it. However, companies can't mislead about whether those things are true or not. Companies can't say that they are socially conscious in the way that they are, you know, using milk sourced from happy cows, if in fact 98% of your milk comes just from factory farms like every other kind of ice cream. That is illegal. So I'm very interested to see where this goes. I would love to know your favorite flavor of Ben & Jerry's. And if you knew that not all Ben & Jerry's milk actually comes from happy cows, and your feelings about that, leave it in a review. DM me on Instagram at the Emily D. Baker. Do you see where I spend most of my time? Yeah, it's on Instagram. Thank you for being with me. Thank you for being here. Thank you for supporting the show. And most of all, thank you for listening. I hope you have an amazing day, and I will talk to you next week. Thank you for listening to today's episode. I talked about a lot of things in business and doing business right. If you need to make sure that your business is all the way legit, go on over to my shop, getlegitshop.com, for all of your legal template needs. And yes, I even have a social media policy that you can add to your employee handbook. So anything you need for your business, getlegitshop.com. If you don't see it there, shoot me a DM and I will help you out with the things that you need. Thanks, friend.